broadcasting to you from Alaska, the last frontier. Welcome to the Arctic Free Press, political perspectives and observations from the top of the world. This is episode one of this podcast. I'm your host, Jay Chaya. Now let's talk about what's really going on out there. So once again, welcome to the Arctic Free Press. I'm your host, Jay Chaya. So in episode one, I thought what I would do is I would explain what the purpose of this podcast is, maybe give you a little background of who I am, and then we probably would talk about the big elephant in the room, you know, the COVID-19 and everything going on, you know, everything from what the facts are, what the actual casualties are, countries that maybe aren't being honest with us. My personal analysis of the next 60 days, my outlook on conspiracy theories, don't even get me started on conspiracy theories, and maybe an economic outlook at the end. So what is the purpose of this site, you might ask yourself? Well, this podcast is a place for me to share my ideas, my thoughts, maybe give a little analysis on current events, political events, maybe some cultural things, U.S. election events, pretty much anything else I can think of. So you might ask yourself, well, okay, great. This is another podcast. Why should I listen to this one? Who is this guy? Well, I am originally from Southeast Texas, born and raised in an area called the Golden Triangle. I graduated high school and joined the Army when I was 19 years old. Along the way, I served as a military intelligence analyst. I did that for a number of years in multiple locations. I got out and I became a consultant for the Department of Defense, mainly working on intelligence analysis and information technology and on training of intelligence analysis, how to train analysts to do the job, how to train analysts to perform the tasks and combat settings and training environments, things like that. Additionally, I I deployed 6 times to Iraq as a civilian. I was in the invasion in 2003. I was in the Ramadi area 2004-2005. I served in Baghdad during the surge. And I was there for the drawdown in 2011. And then most recently, I was in Iraq yet again Iraq and Kuwait from this past September 2019, until January, right after the assassination of the general from Iran who was leading the militia forces in Iraq, which I'll talk about that in probably a future podcast. So now I live and work in Alaska. I've been up here, I don't know, about 5 years now. It's an amazing place. It's a beautiful place. I do all kinds of outdoor activities. I fish, I go hiking, you know, berry picking in the summer, photography, specifically Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis photography, and maybe a little bit of wildlife photography. Those are the kind of things I like to do now. All right, so, you know, there's more that I could tell about myself, but you're not really here to hear a story about me. You're actually here to possibly listen to my thoughts on things going on in the world. So why don't we talk about the thing that has consumed the entire world for several months now. Let's talk about COVID-19, okay? So the virus, you know, has been around for, you know, a while now. Most of the research shows that it's been around since at least late November when it started infecting people in China. And in the, you know, the 4 or 5 months since then, it's pretty much spread around the world. You know, it went from a handful of cases in early December in Wuhan, China, to today there's 2.6 million cases around the world. You know, we've had 185,000 deaths from the virus now. You know, every country is handling it a little bit differently. You know, you're seeing some countries that are doing total lockdowns. Then they're doing okay. You know, you're seeing other countries that are trying an attempt to not lock things down and see if they can achieve what's called herd immunity a little faster than everyone else. So when we're talking about the coronavirus or COVID-19, from now on, I'm going to refer to it as COVID-19 just to make it simpler, so we, you know, we don't have a bunch of terms out there. When we're talking about COVID-19, you know, there's several methods for dealing with it. You know, some countries are doing lockdowns, as I stated, you know, lockdowns in a particular city or region. You know, some other places are not really locking down. You know, some countries aren't really telling us anything at all. And then other countries are doing like what the U.S. is doing. The United States is locking down areas according to what the local governments think is the correct way to handle business. Now, in the U.S., we have currently over 850,000 cases, confirmed cases of COVID-19. We've had about 48,000 deaths, you know, and we've had about, I don't know, 85,000 people recovered. So, you know, active cases right now, and when I say active cases, I mean people actually have the virus right this minute. We have about 725,000 cases. So we're coming up on 750,000 people who are actively diagnosed with COVID-19. You know, the each state in the U.S. is handling it differently. You know, some states are starting to come out of lockdown. Other states are going to try and hold on the lockdowns into late May, early June. You know, it's kind of all over the place. And you would expect that in a system like the United States, which was a federal system. You know, every state in the United States is theoretically an independent country that just operates under a federal system that provides oversight. So in the U.S., you know, we're looking at states like New York, which has, you know, 212,000 cases right now, and they've had 20,000, you know, deaths. So what that means is that if we're looking at this from a mortality perspective, you know, New York has had 262,000 cases total and 20,000 deaths. So they, you know, they've had a good 8% mortality rate. And what I mean is that 8% of the people who were diagnosed with COVID-19 have died since they were diagnosed. And a lot of times what you're going to get into is, you know, you're going to get into all these arguments on the internet. People are going to say things like, oh, well, you know, Jay, you don't know how many people actually have the virus. You don't know how many people, you know, haven't been tested, or how many people had it and recovered and nothing happened to them. Those are accurate facts. We don't know those things. But because we don't know those things, we can't assume anything other than the numbers that we have. And the numbers that we have tell us that in a place like New York, they are suffering roughly an 8% mortality rate. And 8% might not sound like a lot to the average person, but 8% is a gigantic number. You know, the American Civil War, and it's a war and this is a disease and they're very different things, but the American Civil War saw roughly 1% of the entire population of the U.S. die during the war, die from all causes, from combat, from disease, from dying as prisoners of war. You know, every measurement of those who died as a result of the war was roughly 1% of the U.S. population, right? So obviously, when it comes to COVID-19, 1% of the population doesn't have it. We don't know the percentage that does, but what we do know is that of the people who are infected, in a place like New York, for example, roughly 8% are dying. That is a statistically significant number, and that is something that a lot of these people out there who want to say that this isn't a big deal or this is just the flu, it's something that they don't understand. In total, the U.S. has lost almost 50,000 people in a little over 30 days. The entire flu season last year, the U.S. lost less than 50,000 people. So in 1 month, COVID-19 has already killed more people than died from the entire flu of 2018-2019. That's just the way it is. You know, people don't have to like it. They don't have to like the numbers. They don't have to like the analysis right now, but that is the analysis we have right now, and it's the best we can do with the information we have. Now, some other people will come up to me and they'll say, well, you know, there are these other studies out there that show that, you know, so many more people had the disease or so many fewer people died. Well yes, those are pieces of data, and they go into the analysis for this. But that's not the proper way to look at data. So you have one study conducted in one county in California that shows that maybe 3% of the people there have been exposed to the virus, which would significantly lower the overall mortality rate if that was true across the board, if that was true everywhere. But we don't know that. We have no way of knowing that at this time. At this time, all we can do is go off the numbers that we have and then plan accordingly from there. So, you know, I mentioned New York, you know, and then let's go down to, you know, my home state, Texas. Texas has 21,000 cases so far, total cases. You know, they have 550 total deaths, and, you know, they have had, oh, you know, I don't know, a couple thousand people recover. You know, maybe 5,000-6,000 people recover from the disease, leaving them with a total active caseload of around 15,700. Okay, that sounds good, right? That's, you know, Texas has, you know, almost 30 million people, and they only have 15,000 cases. Well, that's great, and that sounds good until you actually dive down into the statistics for Texas. If you start looking at the statistics of growth of the infected, growth in the death rate, the number of infected in Texas is increasing, not decreasing. The number of deaths is accelerating, not decelerating. You know, if you look at this information, it's right there for you. You know, there's several websites out there that track all of this for you. You know, a perfect example is, you know, Texas had 473 new cases today, right? Yesterday, they had 774. So is today a statistical anomaly, or is today, you know, completed for the reporting cycle? We don't know yet. You know, today, so far, they've had, the state of Texas has had 543 deaths, right? 543 deaths total. They had 15 additional deaths today. They had 23 additional deaths yesterday. So again, that is a drop from yesterday, but is that an overall drop? If you go back 3 days and look at a rolling 3-day average, the case numbers in Texas are both up, and the percentage of people dying is up as well. And all of that is coming as the state of Texas is looking to reopen itself. That might not be the best way to go, but that, you know, that's for the local government there in Texas to decide. You know, the state of Georgia is another one. It's doing the same thing. It's opening. In fact, the state of Georgia is going to be open in many areas as soon as Monday. But the problem there is, again, the death rate is rising. The number of people dying per day is slowly going up, as is the number of new cases. You know, you look at those and you think, okay, these guys are you know, going to reopen, and, you know, they're going to do it too quickly, and what does that mean? And then you look at a place like Alaska. You know, I'm gonna kind of brag on my home state, my, you know, where I live right now for a moment. Alaska has 329 total cases. We have 9 deaths total since the entire start of COVID-19. We've had 9 deaths, and of those 9 deaths, actually 2 of them weren't people that lived here. It was 2 people that were Alaskans, but they were living somewhere else. So if you go and look at the data for Alaska, you know, what it tells you is that our numbers hover roughly between 5 and 8 people per day increase, and we have a death roughly every 3 or 4 days. So the state of Alaska has managed these low numbers for a couple of reasons. You know, reason number one is obviously it's a big state. It's the biggest state in the United States in terms of size. Additionally, the population is, I wouldn't say it's spread out, but the population is kind of concentrated in, you know, 3 or 4 larger nodes of people, and then a lot of smaller villages and smaller towns scattered over an enormous geographical area. Additionally, the state locked down relatively early. We had our first 2 or 3 cases here in Alaska, and the governor of Alaska shut down the schools, and then within a few days of that, most businesses had been shut down, and most people had been told to stay home and only go out for essential or emergency needs. And it's been that way for about a month now, and we've kind of plateaued with our numbers here. So, you know, a state like Alaska, and we're gonna open up slowly. You know, we're gonna start opening up next week as well, but we're gonna open up a lot slower than it looks like some of these other states are gonna open up. So, you know, talking about the U.S., you know, you're really seeing a mixed bag of things that are happening. You're seeing some states that are, you know, opening up, in my opinion, recklessly. And I actually think there's going to be a relapse in places like Georgia, Florida, and Texas. They're not done with the first outbreak yet, and they're already opening back up. And I get it. People are doing it for economic reasons. But, you know, overall, that seems to be the path that a lot of states are doing. Everyone wants to kind of get back to work now. Anyway, enough about that. So, you know, that was the U.S. And let's talk about some other countries out there. You know, every country is doing it differently. You know, countries like Spain, Italy, France, those three, you know, they're still in lockdown. They're easing it somewhat, but, you know, they've had a significant loss of life. You know, Italy and France have a 13.4, nearly 13.5% mortality rate. So, you know, as I was saying, the U.S. has, overall, the U.S. has a 5.6% mortality rate. So, a little bit less than the global average. But you're looking at, like I said, Spain, is it, you know, over 10%. Italy and France, they're over 13%. You know, and then even, you know, countries like the UK are closer to 14%. And then you have countries that are actually doing relatively well. You know, you have Germany. Germany has the fifth highest caseload of COVID-19 patients in the world. You know, they've had 150,000 total cases in their country, you know, and yet they've had 5,000 deaths. And I don't mean to say only 5,000 deaths, but they've had 5,000 deaths. So, you know, their mortality rate is like 3.5%. Meanwhile, France has 160,000 cases, and their mortality rate is 13%. You know, 22,000 people roughly have died in France to just over 5,000 people in Germany, and their caseloads are almost the exact same numbers. So there's something going on there. You know, some countries are handling this well. I don't know if it's a medical issue. There's been some hints that perhaps the issue is genetic. I don't know about that. There's so much more about the virus that we have to learn about. But, you know, so, you know, countries, like I said, you know, Germany that are handling it well. You know, Canada is another one. Canada is actually handling the virus relatively well. And then you have countries like China and Iran. China and Iran have unreliable numbers. That's just the simplest way to say it. The Chinese stopped reporting across most of their country in March. So we have no idea what their numbers look like. We have no idea what their rate of infection looks like. We have no idea what their accurate death rate is. One day, basically, China just stopped reporting numbers, and they claimed that they had defeated the virus. And that's not how this works. You don't just wake up one day and say, oh, well, the virus is defeated, so let's go about our lives again. And you're starting to see, you know, some interesting things coming out of China now, is that areas north of Beijing and an area on the border between China and Russia, they're going into lockdown again. In fact, there's an entire village on the Chinese-Russian border where the Chinese military has deployed, and they're not allowing anyone in or out of the area. And what they're saying is, they're saying that people crossing the border from Russia are bringing the virus back into them, and that's not what's happening. You know, speaking of Russia, actually, that's another interesting point. Speaking of Russia, I don't. You know, the government there is they're secretive. They like to keep their secrets. You know, I don't want to say anything too negative about other countries, you know, unless they're doing something outright hostile. And I don't think Russia is doing anything hostile. They seem to be reporting their cases very well. Their numbers of people that they're testing are pretty good. Currently, Russia has 58,000, just over 58,000 total cases. So that's the total number of people that have been infected. Currently, they have about 54,000 active cases. Now, the area where I'm a little suspicious is their death rate, or their death toll. With 58,000 cases, they've only had 613 deaths. That's possible that that's an accurate number, but it's wildly divergent from every other country that's roughly in the same place that they are. You know, so when you're looking at that, you're seeing that that their numbers are a little bit off from what the rest of the world is for people that have the, you know, the similar numbers of infected. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if that is a symptom of government secrecy, or if that is just bad reporting, or if that's just that the death toll maybe hasn't caught up to them yet. What I mean by that is, in a lot of countries, you would see a large number of infected, but a really low death toll the first week or two. And then as the medical and healthcare systems became overwhelmed and people were put on ventilators and there started becoming a shortage of ventilators, like in, say, in Italy, for example, then you started seeing the death rate spike significantly. So that might be what's going on in Russia. I'm not sure yet. And then, you know, looking to the future, I think there's going to be some new hotspots for the virus. I think Peru is going to be a big one. I think India is a ticking time bomb. And, you know, honestly, I think that Sweden is also, you know, maybe headed for some trouble. The problem in Sweden is a unique problem. While most countries attempted to lock down their citizens, Sweden did not do so. What they actually did was they told their citizens to be responsible but go about their lives. Okay, well, that sounds great, but if you don't lock down people and you tell people to go about their lives without any kind of enforcement behind it, then you're not really going to have any kind of social distancing. And with a virus like this, without social distancing, I think you're going to see a significant rise in the statistics. You know, and actually, to be honest, we're already seeing that in Sweden. You know, Sweden has something like 17,000 cases and 2,000 deaths. So, you know, their death toll or their mortality rate for not social distancing is over 10%. Meanwhile, countries like Norway and Finland and Denmark, their neighbors, have significantly lower numbers. Here's a good example. Denmark has 8,000 cases they've had, and they've only had 384 deaths. Sweden had double the cases and four times the deaths. So it's obviously that there's some truth to it, that social distancing decreases both the spread of the virus and the death toll or mortality rate. So yeah, I think Sweden is going to be in a bad place here pretty soon. So, you know, what do I think the next two months are going to hold? Well, I think you're going to see here in the U.S., you're going to see most of the states try and open up quickly. I think you're going to see a relapse in cases. There's still a reservoir out there of people who are carriers of the virus, who were asymptomatic or who never showed symptoms. So because that reservoir exists out there, when we start to open up the economy and we start telling people they can go back to work and go back to restaurants and bowling alleys and gymnasiums and things like that, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a period where things are calm or quiet, if you will, and then you're going to see a significant increase in the number of cases again. And I think that you're going to see that until the middle of summer, when the warmer weather should hopefully decrease the ability of the virus to spread. You know, the great hope is that this will become a virus that is kind of on a cycle. Like it'll return in the fall, winter, and early spring, and then it'll lessen in the summer, and it'll do this kind of back and forth until we develop a vaccine or we develop herd immunity. So I think that you're going to see places like Georgia, Florida, Texas, they're going to have large spikes again within the next 30 to 60 days. Places like New York and New Jersey, where there have already been high numbers, I think that because they're staying on a lockdown longer, you're going to see a drop-off in their cases, a larger drop-off than you're going to see in those states that I previously talked about. All right, so let's talk about conspiracy theories for a minute, okay? I hate conspiracy theories. I absolutely hate them. I don't understand how people can believe things that are unbelievable if you actually start examining the information that is inside of a conspiracy theory. So two of the largest conspiracy theories surrounding COVID-19 are that, number one, it's a biological weapon, or that, number two, it was spread to bring down President Trump and the American government. Both of these ideas are, I'm sorry, both of these ideas are insane. If you believe in these things, you might want to seek mental help. You might need the services of a mental health professional. COVID-19 as a bioweapon would be the most clumsy, inefficient bioweapon ever developed. It would be a bioweapon that the Chinese released on themselves and then spread it around the world. But they didn't spread it evenly, and they didn't even spread it in a way that hurt, you know, countries the most. If you want to hurt the United States, attacking New York doesn't do it. You know, Islamic extremists learned that on 9/11. Attacking New York on 9/11, it hurt us. It hurt the United States, but it wasn't a crushing blow. No, if you want to hurt the United States, if you want to cause terror in the United States, you attack smaller cities. You attack the heartland. You attack places where people don't expect those kind of things. If you live in a place like New York City, it kind of comes with the territory of living there that it's possible that there could be a terror attack or a natural disaster or, you know, some other kind of horrible thing that could happen. But the way that COVID-19 has spread around the world, it would be the most inefficient bioweapon ever. And additionally, it doesn't even hurt the countries that are some of China's other competitors. Yes, the United States is the main competitor for China. That's a true statement. But Japan is a major competitor for China. India is a major competitor for China. South Korea, to a degree, is a competitor for China. Taiwan is a competitor to China. None of these countries have had massive outbreaks, with the exception of India. India, I think, could have a massive outbreak due to a lot of cultural issues, a lot of societal issues. You know, that's for another podcast. We'll talk about that another day. But, you know, the idea that COVID-19 is a bioweapon designed by the Chinese and released upon the world is ridiculous. If someone says that to you, you should laugh in their face, because there's nothing about that that is possibly true. There's nothing about that that could possibly be true. You know, and then the other conspiracy theory that is so popular is that there's a global elite of people. You know, the global elite is the government of China, the government of Russia, the businessman George Soros, some politicians in the U.S. that hate President Trump. They've all conspired together to make sure that COVID-19 harms the United States and harms the country so bad that the people vote Trump out. Again, that is so stupid. I don't even know where to begin with that. To believe that, you have to believe that China and Russia and international businessmen and women and American politicians all conspired together to do this. And you know, when you start thinking about it, the problem with conspiracy theories is that they don't make any sense. You know, conspiracy theories require everyone in on the conspiracy to remain quiet. And that's why they're always so ridiculous when you start talking about them, because there's no way that that wouldn't leak, that a plan like that was being enacted. You know, there would be some person somewhere that either didn't want to be part of the conspiracy anymore, or, you know, didn't want to, you know, be a mass murderer, or, you know, didn't want to betray their country if they were an American citizen, and they would say something. It's the same thing about the, you know, the 9/11 conspiracy, or anything dealing with the QAnon groups. The QAnon conspiracies, or the QAnon groups, are the groups that are driving both of these conspiracy theories. And for those of you out there that don't know what QAnon is, QAnon is this grouping of individuals who think that there is a massive, massive conspiracy against the American people. And they, you know, this massive conspiracy involves things like pedophiles, and it involves tunnels under the earth from, you know, one country to another, and it involves, you know, aliens, and it involves, you know, people looking to destroy America. And it, I don't really want to get into it because that's a whole separate podcast I'm going to do, but the QAnon people are just, they are literally, and I mean that literally, not figuratively, literally insane, mentally challenged people. They probably should, again, seek the services of a mental health professional, because the things that they believe in are no better than fairy tales. So anyway, that's not really the point. The point is that this QAnon group is pushing these two conspiracy theories about COVID-19, and they're pushing them because, you know, to be honest, I don't know why they're pushing them. They're pushing these theories, and there are some people out there that believe them, but I'm just going to tell you, there's no conspiracy to destroy President Trump. There's no conspiracy to destroy the United States between China, Russia, international businessmen and women, and American politicians. And COVID-19 is not a bioweapon, okay? It is a naturally occurring virus. Now, it might, it's possible that it might have come from a lab in China and escaped. You know, maybe a person got contaminated with it or something like that. But it's a naturally occurring virus. We know that from the research that's been done on it. So we know it's not a bioweapon. We know that it's not a created virus. It, you know, at worst, it's a virus that the government of China found and brought back to study, and then it escaped from the lab where they were studying it. That's the worst case scenario. The more likely scenario is that it's a virus that infected, you know, humans. It's a zoonotic virus. A zoonotic virus is a virus that can cross from an animal to a human. Basically, the virus gets inside of a human, and then it mutates or evolves to be able to survive and reproduce inside a different species than the species it was originally found in. So that's what you get. That's the most likely scenario for what COVID-19 is. So yeah, so there's all these people pushing conspiracy theories, and it's just... It's a pain in the ass to deal with them, you know? So anyway, that's kind of what that's all about. So I'm going to kind of wrap it up here. This is my first attempt at this. Obviously, I'm going to get better at this. But yeah, any critiques or criticisms would be awesome. I'm also going to link this podcast to my website that I have. And I'm probably also going to link it to some of my other social media accounts, and I'm going to try and do one of these once a week, like I said. And I would really appreciate anybody that listens to this, if they want to subscribe, go ahead and subscribe. And if there's some comments, go ahead and leave comments for feedback. Good feedback, awful feedback, you know, Jay, that's great, more of this, you know, Jay, this is terrible, you need to, you know, keep your day job, you know, whatever. Anything you want to say would be greatly appreciated, and I look forward to hearing more from you. All right, thanks everybody.